Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
What's going on, moviegoers? It's another episode of Anatomy of a Movie. I'm Ryan Nilsson, senior producer of Popcorn Talk, and today we are talking about Sonic the Hedgehog. It's the new video game movie based off the Sega character, and I'm joined by an incredible co-host. Y'all, he's an editor. He's a DJ. He's the host of the NXT and Raw After Show, and he's a massive Sonic the Hedgehog fan. It is Flobo Boyce.
Yo, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm jamming out to this theme music. This is great.
I know, we got jams for this.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
It's Popcorn Talk, because you're usually on the more of the AfterBuzz content.
Yeah, AfterBuzz content. Trying to get the Black Hollywood Live, but until then, Popcorn Talk is where I'm at today.
PTN. And it's a great show to be on today, because it's Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
You know, most video game movies, let's be honest, they're not good.
Right, that's true.
And I think, you know, people with the recent video game films, like a Detective Pikachu, like a Tomb Raider, there's been some hope. I think we are now getting over that hill of the horrible video game movies. Gone are the days of the Mario Bros.
Yeah.
Just catastrophes.
Woo.
And we have one now. It's Sonic the Hedgehog, and this had a crazy development. We're going to break it down. So for those new to Anatomy of a Movie, we're going to start out with just our overall thoughts of the film, then go back into some of the pre-production development of the film, then kind of break down the writing, the story, some of the performances, and now the box office, the success, and see if we think there might be a sequel. But Blobo,
yeah,
I just want to open up.
Sure.
Relation to the Sonic character. Did you play a lot of video games as a kid?
Yes and no. So we were a Nintendo household.
Oh yeah.
My brother was a nerd, thankfully. So his homework was done super quick. So my mom felt so bad for him, sitting there twiddling his thumbs at 4:30 in the afternoon, bought us a Nintendo. My next door neighbor, the bad boy of the hood, had a Genesis.
Oh my gosh.
So it was almost like forbidden fruit to go next door to play Sonic the Hedgehog. And sure, it was the first one. There was no Tails. There was no Spin Dash. You had to go like literally run as fast as you could. But
yeah.
I was instantly enamored. And that was like, what, 1991? I
mean, wow. Don't date yourself.
I have to, bro. I mean, to think about how this character is so new, relatively speaking, in the pantheon of Mickey Mouse and all these things, but becomes such an endearing icon to generations across all different nerddoms and fandoms. Dude, I was so excited to actually have a movie. And to your point, a lot of those video game movies could be scary. A lot of Sonic games were scary.
Right.
So I was kind of pleasantly surprised.
Pleasantly surprised. Yeah. I mean, for me, the hope started after we got something like Wreck-It Ralph, where you had some of these characters in the background or as side characters. You're like, wow, this actually works in a narrative. For me, Sonic the Hedgehog, I am not a huge gamer. I know, but I did play a lot of video games as a kid. I'm just saying I wasn't really good at them.
Yeah.
Similarly, my neighbors had all the consoles. And we might have had an Xbox, but they had everything. So we would go over and just play with each other and play the video games. Sonic the Hedgehog was on there. I was first introduced to him on one of the Super Smash Bros. Games, and then I actually got one of the Sonic
games. Which one?
It was like the first one for Wii.
Okay, Brawl? Yeah.
Like Brawl, yeah. And I was like, oh my god, he's awesome, he's fast. And then I actually got one of his games for PS2 and played it a lot. So I knew this character. I was familiar with a lot of the side characters, Dr. Robotnik,
right,
that we see in this film. And I was really excited to see it come to life. And I just want to get your overall thoughts. What did you think? Did you see this movie on Valentine's Day?
I did.
Wow.
My Valentine's Day was Sonic the Hedgehog. And we'll get into a lot of reasons why that is. But as someone who was a fan from the first year, maybe even the second year of his existence as a character, the fandom is one of the biggest fandoms on the planet. I would argue it's bigger than Harry Potter. I would argue it's bigger than Star Trek. And if you guys don't...
Really?
If you don't believe me, I swear to you, go to Wikipedia, and you'll notice there's like hundreds of thousands of documents and pages dedicated to the pantheon of Sonic the Hedgehog and the games and the characters and the Archie comics and all the books and stuff. The lore is... The lore has the one of those... And we think we've been through a lot. There have been some bad games. There have been some bad shows. There have been some corruption of what we think Sonic is and bad camera angles and all that. So this movie was really a culmination for that. It was like a thank you reward to the fans. And so we'll get into that more a little bit later when there was some fan service built in even before the movie was released. It was like finally someone's understanding the character and giving it just due.
Totally.
Yeah.
And that's why we got you on the panel, because I don't know a lot about the history of Sonic. I didn't know he had all these pages in the Library of Congress.
Yeah,
and all this. Yeah, you know, I was always a little apprehensive. Like we said earlier, the video game movies just don't have a good track record.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even something like Detective Pikachu, I actually enjoyed myself with. I thought it was a good time at the movies. It was a fun film to watch. When you start to break it down in the story, like, yeah, it's not the most, doesn't make a lot of sense, but I actually thought it worked as opposed to stuff we've gotten in the past. I kind of feel similarly about this movie. I think that this movie is a fun time at the theater. I was very satisfied, pleasantly surprised how much I enjoyed it. And above all else, Jim Carrey in this movie, oh my gosh, I just didn't expect to get this peak Jim Carrey performance that I don't think we've seen in a while. You know, he had such an incredible run in the 90s, early 2000s, and he has all these, you know, I don't need to tell you, he's just an incredible actor with so many memorable roles. This role, I think, is my favorite he's done in maybe 10 years. Yeah. I loved him in this movie, and he completely made the movie. I think it's one thing to satisfy the kid audience. This is a PG film. It's more like a family-friendly movie. But I honestly think adults are going to enjoy this movie just as much as kids because of Jim Carrey and because of a lot of the jokes in this movie. So I did like it a lot, too. Do you think, as an overall film, that it kind of knocked it out of the park for you, or were you just kind of like pleasantly, you're just satisfied with it?
That's a fair question. I'm going to give it, if my review was at the time, that my knee-jerk, the day of, was about 7, maybe 6.75 out of 10.
Okay.
The story was great. It was simple for the children, or the kids out there, you know, kids at heart. Seeing things go fast is always great. But that really was the link to the older audience, was Jim Carrey's performance. Because now, as an adult, if you were like me and went by yourself, you went with an actual child.
I went by myself on Valentine's Day, too, so we're both...
Yeah, bam, why
boom,
not?
Boom, we should have gone together.
I know. Right? But Jim Carrey's performances, you can sit there and say, hey, you know what? If you like him here, son, daughter, you know, here's a Mask, here's Ace Ventura, here's these other movies where you had this kind of range. It was a treat for
him. He really was huge, and people were kind of surprised how big he was, and I saw a few reviews saying, like, whoa, he's way too over the top. I'm like, do you even know Jim Carrey?
Yeah.
Like, he's over the top. You hire Jim Carrey to be over the top.
Right.
And I thought he just delivered.
I don't want William Dafoe as Dr. Robotnik.
I kind of want to see that. But
Hedgehog, yeah.
But it's a great point. It sounds like we both really like the movie. I think once you start breaking it down a little, like, there's some story elements that I'm like, oh, that doesn't fully line up, or that doesn't fully make sense, or they didn't really answer that, that we'll kind of get into later with the writing, that's where it starts to sort of fall apart for me, but I still think this is a good film. I don't think it's anywhere near great, but I think this is a solid, good film. We're just transitioning now into the development. Now, this movie had a really unique production development history.
Yeah.
The first trailer coming out early 2018.
With Coolio on the soundtrack.
Coolio on the soundtrack. And the reaction from the audience.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't think I've ever seen film Twitter just collectively agree this is terrible. Like, everyone just thought Sonic looked awful. The animation, the visual effects. And I mean, no offense to those artists, but like, man, this was bad. And I'm usually against audiences changing something from the studio before they've seen it. Like, before you've seen the final product, just having a predetermined opinion on it. But this was bad.
Yeah.
And I think this is an exception to that rule. And I'm really pleasantly surprised, satisfied that the fact that they actually changed it for the better. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a very complex issue, because even though the design was freakishly scary, you can't deny that the hair effects and the blades of the quills were definitely, like, top-notch state of the art at the time. So, like, yeah, Sonic shouldn't have teeth or have split eyes like that.
Right.
But I really think what made it awesome is that, okay, I was so resigned in seeing Sonic fail in different media, right? Mm-hmm. I was kind of like, okay, this is just an interpretation of Sonic. It's not for me. Like, I go to the store. I'm the guy who reads Archie comics. I buy the Archie comics at the newsstand or at the grocery store to read Adventures of Archie and Betty and Veronica.
Right.
But Riverdale isn't my flavor. I just figured it's not for me. But then the fact that it went back to see classic Sonic, I mean, even with the little bit of a mix that has, like, the classic Sonic head and the modern Sonic, like, body, I was like, great.
Yeah, the change.
Yeah, it totally was, hey, look, this is definitely for the people that rode with us during the Sonic Adventure era. So this is like 99, 2000, 2001 fan base as well.
It rolls with that nostalgia really well, but man, that other design is just horrifying. Like, it really is bad. And I do want to just say thank you so much to the studio for really changing that and listening to the fans. Do you think that this sets a false precedent, though, for the future, moving forward, if fans take issue with something they see in a trailer or with concept art? Like, I know Batman set photos came out today.
Sure.
And people are already, like, all up in arms. Some people love it, some people don't. Do you think this sets up a false precedent about audience having too much say with the studio and maybe changing their mind.
Yeah, once you give audience a platform, they're always going to be in your ear. But if I'm Paramount and I'm a major, but I'm not really a player like how Disney is, everything's riding on not only this film, but the franchise and the licensing of it. So yeah. As much as you want to say, no, we're going to keep moving forward, we have the investment, if no one shows up to your movie, that franchise is dead in the water. Now with movies being so risk averse and investing into intellectual properties, I'm sure they paid Sega a hefty fee for Sonic, yeah, you got to make sure that people show up, right?
That's a great point. I think the key difference with that parallel I was just drawing with Batman is Batman's a proven commodity at the box office.
Yeah. Like
it is box office, so you can really just trust your gut on your portrayal, whereas Sonic, this is really the first feature film, like we're getting in live action Sonic. They really got to make sure it's good this first time. So I agree with you. I'm worried. I'm always a little worried with if you give the audience an inch, they're going to take a mile.
They always do.
But I think this is an exception.
Yeah.
I really do. And I think it's working out handsomely for them. This has already made $128.3 million. At the box office. Holy cow.
Yeah, rightfully
like,
so.
That is wild. And I think that goes into what you were just saying earlier. Apparently there's like a massive fan group that I knew video game fans, there's a plethora. There's
sure.
a ton. But when it comes to Sonic the Hedgehog, like wow, I just didn't know that it was on par, maybe even above Mario. Like this
yeah.
is huge fandom. Huge turnout.
Yeah, and I think this because Sonic has been interpreted so many different times, there's people that have their own different flavors and the whole subculture about it. And if you're like me, the older fan group, because I am an old man, a lot of us went because it was redesigned. Because hey, look, you took the effort to stop production. I think the director, Jeff Fowler, was it the name of Jeff Fowler?
Yes.
Said, hey, look, man, we want to make this as best as we can. Bear with us. That to me was enough to say, okay, they put the effort in, I'm going to go and show out. And not to say I don't usually pay for movies, but I'm at that age now where it's like, I'll just wait 6 weeks. Because I grew up in a time where you'd wait 6 months for video. Now you can wait 6 weeks. So I was there day one, and got the advance ticket because, hey, look, I wanted to tell the studios that if you took the effort listed to the fans, it'll pay off.
Wow. Yeah, I think it was a great move on them. It's definitely paying off now, and I think it's going to pay off moving forward. Another big thing with just, you know, we love the movie, and we really had a good time, and I think the audiences are too. With a lot of these video game films, they're guaranteed, like, a massive amount of money. If you make a Mario movie, it's going to make X number of dollars. It's probably going to be successful. The thing is, if people like it, are they going to keep going back?
Right.
I think this is an example of one that people will keep going back for. Now kind of just moving into the movie, let's break this down a little. Let's get into the story, because I was really surprised how endearing. I didn't know we were going to get like a road trip Sonic movie.
Yeah.
That's basically what we got. But we're introduced to Sonic the Hedgehog up top, and he's hanging out. First of all, he has these rings, and we know that for those not familiar with the games or anything, these rings contain a lot of power, and he can kind of like jump in between worlds or teleport,
right.
per se, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's kind of that's a reinterpretation, because like the rings are the basic currency in the game as far as like, getting rings and getting one-ups, but there are warp zones where at the end of levels, if you did pretty well, there was like a giant ring you can jump into for those bonus points and rounds and stuff.
And he's hanging out on Earth.
Chilling out.
Well,
props to him, because he went to Earth as a kid. Like,
right.
I moved to California at 21, and I was like struggling for years, you know what I'm saying? So
he's basically Superman in that he's gone from his world.
Got his own place.
His own place, but he, unlike Superman, he doesn't live among us. He hides.
Right.
And he's just kind of running by everyone at once. No one really sees him, and he's just hanging out in James Marsden, Officer Tom Wachowski, I believe?
Yeah, Wachowski.
Officer Tom Wachowski's backyard, who is just married, and he has dreams of moving to San Francisco and becoming more than just a beat cop. He wants to be a detective. He wants to be in the city, actually making a difference when maybe he's making a difference in his hometown. You know, at first I was like, all right, where are they going to go with this? I actually really liked the first encounter. I thought that was so creative.
Yeah.
And that Jim Carrey's character, Dr. Robotnik, has been cleared by the government to just do anything.
Begrudgingly.
Yeah. Like, there's no rules. He can do whatever he wants. And I think the way they intro his character was beyond brilliant. Like, he just comes in and he goes, what's your name? I don't care.
Right.
Stand out of my way. What did you think of the introduction to all of these main characters?
I think the Robotnik's introduction was one of the most like charming parts of the film. You can hear in the theater I watched, and all of the adults just laughed, because it was pure Carrie. It was definitely a good way to make this guy look sinister, but not in a real threatening way. We're adults, but, you know, as a kid, that first scene, seeing, you know, Sonic's caretaker, assumedly being attacked. It was kind of traumatic. Very, very Pixar formula. Like the top of the film, the murder, whatever happens.
Yeah, right? Caretaker.
Yeah, so having the villain be like this fun-loving guy was definitely like, hey, kids, we're not going to be that kind of movie. But the whole thing has a whole Spielbergian thing about it. Like E.T., like, you know, like this whole, like, we're the G-Men. Everybody get this alien thing. So I was on board for that.
No. You know, they don't really ever go back to that, like where his caretaker, what happened to his caretaker, or those people that were after.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they might say that for a sequel. Did that bother you that we never got any more closure around that?
It didn't bother me quite yet, but there's not much about Longclaw. So I really thought that would be some kind of reference at the end or a bookend, or maybe she did it out. But like, this has a setup to the premise of the movie. Here are your rings, and here's what we can do with these rings. Peace. It was fine.
Peace. Yeah. And I mean, so now Dr. Robotnik's after Sonic. A great scene of him going up to, or a great scene of him running into James Marsden and him shooting him with, what was the dart?
Yeah, it was like a bear tranquilizer.
A bear tranquilizer that he joked about using over the phone with his wife. And then he shot Sonic with it, which was a great kind of plot device to slow Sonic down.
Right.
Like, he can't run after being tranquilized with that.
What is pretty creative, right? My legs are like noodles or whatever he said.
Oh, yeah. So funny. And then we get Robotnik going up to his house and basically saying, I think you have this extraterrestrial, this other being on your property, and him not letting him in. We start to get that camaraderie with him and James Marsden's character, and eventually them having to go on the road. What did you think about, you know, you have this character like Sonic who can literally run to the Pacific Ocean in 3 seconds and then come back. I was so fascinated by how they took that aspect of him and still had a story around it, because you feel like, oh, he can probably solve a lot of problems really quickly, but he doesn't know any better. How do you think the writers did in, I guess, pandering or not pandering, I guess, going to that level or just behaving with that plot device.
Yeah, for sure. I think pop culture has been spoiled with 7 seasons of The Flash, right? You wonder how many times did a guy run really fast, but they find ways to make that work. So, okay, he can't run because his legs are noodles, or he doesn't know where San Francisco is specifically. So there are very specific things put there in place to make sure, okay, it's not a 5-second film, right? And also, we'll get to it later, but like, he couldn't run up the side of the building. He could run down, but he can't run up the side of the Transamerica building to keep these other characters involved in the story.
There were some rules.
Yeah.
They did set up a few rules in regards to Sonic. One thing I really loved was the slow motion sequences.
Yes.
We got something similar in a few X-Men movies with Quicksilver.
True.
Or even in The Flash. But this one was its own kind of thing. Like, it really, time froze for him, and he can do whatever he wants. I love the sequences. Did you have a favorite or one that stood out?
Oh, definitely one, the roadhouse, the bar.
Yeah.
This is the whole thing about the use of Z-axis motion. For those of you who are not familiar, like, you know, things happen on planes, you know, vertical is Y, horizontal is X. That 3D front to camera and back to camera is called Z-axis motion. It shows dynamicism in the scene, so things look faster. So here it is when time is slowing down. He's like going around and like, you know, messing around with people with their cow heads and stuff on things at this roadhouse bar, which is very such a common movie trope of like, let's go to the bar and cause some havoc, cause some trouble. But it's done in such a cool and playful way. If I've never seen it before, if I was a kid, I'd be like, wow, this is pretty cool, pretty fun, pretty innovative.
Yeah, it really was. That roadhouse sequence was awesome.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny how they got in there, though, because Sonic just, like, looked out the window and saw people playing, and he's like, you know, I'm just going to go in.
Yeah, it was kind of
no
random.
One recognized him. Like, he has literally the most over-the-top disguise, and he just had a cowboy hat on.
Right.
And some glasses.
Hey, he has a disease, remember?
That's right.
Okay.
That was really funny, and now I actually want to bring up some of the comedic writing. I was shocked how much quote-unquote adult humor was kind of in this movie.
Yeah.
They even had, like, a domestic terrorism joke in there.
Yes, exactly.
They said that Sonic was a domestic terrorist.
Right.
Did you think the humor would satisfy audiences?
Yeah, this reminds me of the time, like, in the mid-early 90s, where there wasn't a PG rating or PG-13 rating. It was either like PG or R.
Right.
So all the films had this weird middle way to like split the middle. So movies like E.T. had the penis breath joke wouldn't happen in a family film, but it does because it really wasn't a go. So I think that's what makes things rewatchable and almost like a tradition. I can imagine someone saying, hey, look, every Valentine's Day we watch Sonic the Hedgehog because it's so unique for what it is.
It really is. And I think there was another I don't know if this is much of a joke, and I might be jumping the gun a little towards the end, but when they go to that building, and they're like, we have a jumper.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a jumper on top of the building. Right. Let us go up. And like, all right, go for it. I was like, whoa, that was in a Sonic movie?
I thought you said that's not my child in the bag.
Oh, my gosh. Like, yeah. Like, really funny, though. Like, incredible sequences. I really thought that was entertaining. Just going along with the story now, I wanted to talk about, back with Dr. Eggman or Robotnik, just having no consequences to what he does to the Earth. There was that sequence on the highway when they're chasing after the truck.
Right.
He literally blows up a highway.
Yeah. And well, it's Montana. Who
it was Montana. Who cares? No one cares. Yeah. Like, there was no one on the road. But wow, like there was a ton of destruction there in a scene where they kept blowing up Dr. Robotnik's car and then it would just split out like the Dark Knight's Batmobile.
Right.
Like just a bike would come out or then a smaller one would come out.
It just makes you wonder if like his stuff was all his stuff the government's okay with or was the government sanctioned to like who's doing this like highway destruction program? I have no idea.
Yeah, it almost like it didn't matter.
Yeah, and, it didn't matter at all.
And when you start to really think about it, maybe it bothers you a little, but the way they put it in the film, it was just fun.
Yeah, and even the small one, when Sonic goes, can we keep him? Oh. Definitely a moment that goes back to a character beat. Because I think in most modern games, Sonic's about 15 years old. So there's that sense of wonder being like, oh, well, yeah, what's
really?
This? Yeah,
I didn't know
he's
that.
A teenager. He's a teenager, yeah. So they pull from a lot of different like lore. Like, you know, in... wow, let's stop being too nerdy here.
You got it.
There was two Sonic cartoons that came at the same time. There's the one. There was Sonic the Hedgehog called Sad AM. Mm-hmm. That's the one where he, like, you know, he has his own backstory about being an experiment for Robotnik. And then there's the Avenger of Sonic the Hedgehog, which is the one that Jaleel did first.
Jaleel White,
He did both, but he was boy, but he was that one first. And I watched the Avenger of Sonic the Hedgehog every morning before school. And to my knowledge, that was the one where they put the fact they love chili dogs in his lore. And everything
and they call back to that.
Everything since then, every movie or TV show since then has been like, oh, chili dogs. And like, yeah, sure, Hedgehog ate chili dogs.
They did
whatever.
So many great Easter eggs like that throughout the entire movie. The things in the game. I didn't even know that was a reference, but they referenced chili dogs a
all
lot.
The time, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it just really shows that they put a lot of love into this script, which, again, we just haven't gotten that in a lot of video game movies. Or at least in the sense that they relate to the story.
Sure.
And they just really knocked it out of the park with that.
Do you like chili dogs? Are you a fan?
I do like chili dogs.
I never had one before.
I've
had chili.
It's weird because I used to love just plain old hot dogs, but now I've kind of, I don't know, they just kind of gross me out.
Yeah,
I don't know
why. I'm the same way.
Just kind of weird.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm burger guy.
Burger guy. Just finishing up with the story part of this.
Man.
Let's just fast forward to San Francisco.
Okay.
There's a lot of character beats along the way that I actually thought were really well handled. At one point, him just saying, you know, like, this isn't your space to Sonic, and Sonic... The whole plot of the movie, really, is Sonic just wants a friend. That's really the plot. He just wants to high-five a friend.
Yeah.
Which sounds like kind of a low stakes, but it works for this type of movie.
True.
And by the end, you know, we have this really fun finale where they meet up with his wife and his sister-in-law. The sister-in-law character, I don't know about your theater, my theater loved her, thought she was hysterical. What did you think?
You know what? Taking a step back, I like the fact that the couple here was interracial, but it was never a plot point. It was never like, yo, my wife is this, and I'm this. So to have like almost a universal trope of the relative of a wife being like, I don't like him just for being that guy, being a bum, and not because of his race, I thought it was pretty awesome. And I know it's a thing to jump on a soapbox about, but it's been about 15, 20 years to be seen that happen. So the fact that we have this story about Sonic trying to find a family that loves him back the way he loves back that town. It was awesome that the only opposition he got or his other family members got was in this weird big city they didn't want to be a part of to begin with because they belong in Montana.
Completely. It was an interracial couple and they didn't make any... thing about it was just kind of a detail in the movie.
Yeah.
I think they actually only kissed once, which I don't know if that was because it was a PG or anything like that. But that was an interesting choice. I just love the sister-in-law character so much because she just hates Tom.
Yeah.
The whole movie.
Yeah.
And is like, can you got divorced? She didn't even spelled out divorce
right.
in that one scene. She was really great. And they tied her up.
Well, I mean.
To leave.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
Very John Hughes of her. But
Very John Hughes. And then we get this sequence where they go up, there's a jumper, they're there, and they jump off the roof in a really cool use of that slow motion once again where he dodges all the bullets and rockets and jumps down, and he can run down the building, but not up.
Right up the building.
And they teleport back home, which again, like, just really clever storytelling.
Yeah.
And use of just like these two locations.
Everything in San Francisco paid off. Like, it just, to me, it was kind of interesting where it was like, Maddie, oh, she's a veterinarian. Oh, really?
Oh, maybe she can help you if you get injured.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or the fact that Robotnik stole the quill, one of Sonic's quills. So, like, when he was in the slow motion thing, it got, like, disrupted by having super fast Robotnik. And it was
oh, my gosh.
Like, to me, everything, like, paid off at the end, which this takes me back to a review that Roger Ebert had when he was alive about Punisher Warzone, which is a random reference.
What a callback.
And he says, look, man, there are no bad movies anymore because the movie filmmaking has gotten so advanced and so evolved. Here's a movie, Sonic the Hedgehog, where it could have just been like him running fast for 2 hours. It'd be fine. But now we have
to watch.
Yeah, we have these character beats and moments and story plot points to call back to each other and chili dogs. It's great.
It was great. I mean, yeah, I think that's such an interesting Robert Ebert poll. Well, there's a lot to unpack with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point. I definitely think it's these little details, it's this minutia that actually, I think, makes this movie kind of stand above other video game films. And then, you know, it was similar to a scene right out of Man of Steel where they're just in this, like, small town right on, like, the main road, and they're just having it out, and Dr. Robotnik's in the ship,
right,
aiming at Sonic, aiming at Tom, and Jim Carrey's just huge at this point, and they get the rings and send him off to this, like, random world.
Yeah.
Really fun.
Mushrooms.
Mushrooms, that's right. The Mushroom Planet.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really fun finale, and it didn't really drop the ball. It stayed the course. How did you think they wrapped up the film?
It's classic Sonic. The first couple zones in the first game, all you do is jump on his ship. And we saw that, right? And we saw it in a way, granted, it's kind of like the I won't say cheesy, but the trope of everyone coming out, like Old West, High Noon, going, what's going on? We're not going to do anything. We're going to stand here. But to me, it was great. It totally played to it. And again, it paid off the fact that when Sonic gets emotionally charged, he literally charges up.
Right.
And so that's why his extra oomph, you know, destroyed that ship, or at least pushed the ship into the Mushroom Planet.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So we covered the story. I just want to go over a few of my favorite scenes real quick.
Yeah.
You mentioned Dr. Robotnik getting the quill.
Mm-hmm.
The scene in his vehicle.
Yeah.
Where he puts the quill in and just starts dancing.
Right.
Is going to be a huge meme, first off.
Yeah.
When this movie comes out, everyone's going to rip that and add any song they want to it. Oh my gosh, this was my highlight moment for Carrie.
Yeah.
Where you could tell this was just like pure improvisation. There's no way they wrote this.
Right.
They probably wrote like, he dances a little.
Yeah, exactly.
This was like a minute and a half. And one of my favorite lines is when his assistant comes up to him and is like, I just want to see if you want a latte. And he yells, of course I want a latte. I love the way you make them.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That's a line of the show right there. I hopefully they were nuts.
He was just, that was my highlight of the film. Did you have like a highlight moment or scene? Favorite part.
I love the latte line. I can't deny that. Because
yeah.
It was like totally in the middle. And I also like the fact that he's like making things happen in his lab. Even though it kind of ended weird for me because it had to move the plot along, I did like the baseball scene. I'm a baseball guy. I love the fact he played every single position and he was like sitting there going like hating himself, but loving himself. And after a while, they didn't even show him moving to each position. He was just playing himself. Which I thought was pretty cool.
And that's a great scene.
And if I can go that fast, I'll probably do that all day. You know?
It showed us up top just how fast he is. Like he can do all this at once.
Yeah.
So that was a great scene because also just showed us more about his character. You know, moving on from that, just talking about the cast real quick, you know, you said Jaleel White, he voiced Sonic in a lot of the TV shows and games. Ben Schwartz voicing Sonic in this one. Ben Schwartz from Parks and Rec fame. And I think the Good Morning Show on YouTube, a good comedy show.
Yeah.
He's really funny. I thought he was solid as Sonic, and I was surprised his voice could actually get that high. I couldn't even picture Ben Schwartz when I was watching this movie.
Yeah.
What did you think of the cast? Did you have any standouts?
Ah, man, that's really hard. Because, again, I've grew up with Jaleel White. You know, that's no good.
You know what
I mean? For the video games, Roger Craig Smith is my favorite of all time. He actually went to my film school, he was a Chapman.
Oh, wow.
And Jason Griffith had a, because he's also in the Sonic X anime and some of the recent games. So if you played Sonic Adventure 2 through Heroes, Jason Griffith was your guy. So
did you miss any of them? Did you wish that either of them were kind of the voice?
Roger Craig Smith is my guy. Like, it's almost like, what's his name? When you talk about Batman. You know, Kevin Conroy.
Yeah, Kevin Conroy.
He's Batman. And sure, Bruce Greenwood's good, but like, you know, Kevin Conroy's Batman. So me, Roger Craig Smith will always be Sonic. But Bull it
Arnett's
was fun.
My Batman.
Yeah, Lego Batman. It was great. I mean, I think he acquitted himself well to have that younger character and then be full of wonder, but not be able to fight back and say, hey, look, you're leaving your family by going to San Francisco. You need a little bit of that gravitas, too.
Totally. And, a lot of the human characters, I had no problems with any of their performances. I thought they were all fine, kind of surface level, but not bad by any means. Aside from Jim Carrey, he was terrific. Just going to we had a few post-credits.
Okay, yeah.
There was a post-credit scene in this movie. And
there's a couple.
Tails!
Yes!
Tails!
Woo!
At the end of this movie.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Probably going to be in the sequel.
Hopefully
I'm excited. We had a writer come on one of our sister shows on this network called The Con Guys. It was Josh Miller. Josh Miller, one of the five writers on this, but he's one of the two credited with the actual official screenplay. He said he would love to get Knuckles in the sequel. Is there any major character or detail that you would want in a Sonic the Hedgehog sequel?
Man, a lot of my favorite characters are so obscure, they probably wouldn't even make sense there. But Shadow eventually, even though Shadow got really corny towards the end of his run, but the idea of like another, of being a genetically engineered hedgehog life form would be a kind of cool idea as a movie trope. In the Sonic Riders series,
yeah,
he's so cool. I'm a Jet the Hawk fan, even though it's kind of random.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to be old school Genesis, you got to put like Mighty or the Armadillo in there. Those are my three choices right there.
Did any of those final scenes kind of like excite you for the sequel? We had Eggman. Shaved head.
Yeah.
Big stash.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Just going huge.
But that was always my question as a kid. I was like, because, you know, the idea is that Eggman is taking all these furry woodland creatures and putting them in the machines. So you're like, well, who's this one dude in Green Hill Zone who's hanging out? Like, where's his friends and family? Like, where's he getting his groceries? So now I see why. He was an earthling that got moving on. Yeah. Vito in the chat says he wants Big the Cat and Froggy from Sonic Adventure 1 in the series.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. They're, it just feels like they can go anywhere with
yeah.
it. It had such a open. It had a great ending, but it left the door open for so many possibilities, and it felt pretty natural. Just talking about other details of the film, I'm more critical now. Just little issues we had moving into that side of things. The product placement in this movie. There is one scene that I think was so appallingly product placement. I haven't felt so like forced to endure it since something like Transformers 4 with the Bud Light.
Okay.
There's a scene in this movie where they literally go, I have no apps on my phone. Oh my God. Like, yeah, it's clean. Other than the Olive Garden app, man, bottomless breadsticks. That bowl is amazing. You're like, what?
What's wrong with Olive Garden?
Dude, that was so in your face.
Okay. You
oh
know
my
what?
God. That bothered me so much. And then later in the movie, they do it again.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my God, you have the Olive Garden app? Yeah. Oh, their bottomless breadstick bowl is great. Like, what?
You are probably right. Olive Garden got paid a massive sum. But I will say this. When I was 18, I went away to college to a small town in Florida, and Olive Garden and Chili's were like things to do every weekend. We're going to Olive Garden. Woo!
No shots at Olive Garden.
Yeah,
and I don't think they got paid. I think they paid for Sonic for this product placement.
Yeah.
I am just, wow, they couldn't have been any more subtle. And it wasn't quite playful enough for me to be like,
that's
oh,
also
they're
fair.
Joking around.
Awesome.
I was just rolling my eyes. And I forgot about it because it was a brief. It wasn't like as obscene or as long as like a Bud Light scene in a Transformer
movie. That reminds me of Iron Man 1 with the Burger King. Like, wait, all the weeks out there in the Middle East, you want a cheeseburger, a Whopper?
But listen, dude.
Are you kidding me?
They kind of made that. You know what? I'll fight you on that one because that one felt like it played into the story. Like he'd just been in this cave all. He wants an American cheeseburger.
Yeah.
They didn't say Burger King. It was kind of in the corner. It wasn't taking up the whole frame. They literally were like the Olive Garden app, bottomless breadsticks, the endless salad. How great is it? I'm like, jeez. It was aggressive.
Let's go afterwards, man. I'm hungry.
Let's go. Yeah. We'll get a reservation and everything.
The Olive Garden app, now available.
But for a movie, you know, for that to be my biggest critique, that's fine,
yeah.
I think. Other than that, a few story things, like Dr. Eggman's invincible. There's basically no... This is one thing I thought of.
Sure.
They classify Sonic, the government, our U.S. government classified
USA.
Sonic as a domestic terrorist. I didn't see them remove that label.
Right.
So, as far as we know, he's still a terrorist.
That sounds like a John Wick storyline. You must
right.
run, John.
You have 48 hours.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because imagine if if you look at Sonic Adventure 2, the first mission is when you, you know, City Escape, when he jumps out of the little helicopter and there's like G-U-N going after him. Like, I want to see that. I want to see like guns and lasers from other government organizations, you know, running, chasing Sonic. At least at first, until we realize it's a bigger threat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I can suspend my disbelief for that. I was still... I don't know. I still wanted a little bit of that closure because they made a point to classify him as a domestic terrorist, and then they never removed that. Or they didn't really see... I don't think the world got to see Sonic be the hero, even though he did save the day.
Yeah.
So it might be like a superhero situation where he's still going to be in hiding.
True.
Et cetera, et cetera. The government does come to their doorstep at the end, and they're like, yeah, he's not here. And they're like, we know he's here.
Yeah.
We'll be after him.
Right.
Which is kind of nice.
And who's Dr. Robotnik?
Right. Where is he?
He's been disavowed.
Exactly. So, yeah, a lot of fun stuff with that. Let's see. I'm just going to break down some of the audience reception now. Positive all the way around. Tomato meter at 63%. People sometimes think that's bad. That is a fresh rating. That is the majority of the critics. 63% of the critics that saw this liked the movie. They gave it a positive rating. IMDb score of a 6.9. A cinema score of an A, which is, wow, that's pretty high.
Yeah.
So a glorified, positive, reviewed film, and that all across the board. Really great to hear. And the box office, as we said earlier, $128.3 million so far.
Million?
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I think it's only going to grow. They don't have another animated, per se, release until Onward with Pixar. And this isn't really an animated movie. This is a live-action Sonic, but I think that is the same audience. I just think that this is a full-blown success, and I could not be more excited to see where they move forward with it. Any comments on the audience reception or how that might move the box office forward?
Yeah, it was one of those things where you kind of were wishing, hoping that people come out and like it. Because even though there was rumblings of, oh, let's go and support the film because of the reanimation. Let's go and support the film because of Valentine's Day and we're all single.
Do you think Valentine's Day was a big aspect of it?
Huge, man. Because if you look at that weekend, there's not much to watch if you did not have a significant other.
It's a good point.
It's escapism in the most places of the country. It's the middle of winter.
Yeah.
So it's the middle of winter, you're getting a giant summer movie formula in February. I don't see why that did not play into
Plus,
it.
Plus, President's Day. That too. Monday.
Yeah.
So you have a two-holiday knock, boom, boom. All the people who are kind of single, or even with your couples, they go to see this movie, and it's a family-friendly movie, and you also have that third day off.
Yeah.
I think this was just a great spot. I know Deadpool did this in years past. They opened on Valentine's Day. This has become like a big weekend at the movies to really open your film.
Absolutely, because everyone wants to be out, whether or not they have someone or not. You don't want to be stuck at home with a bottle of wine. That's your thing, you know?
And, yeah, entirely. Yeah. And I think it's just another reason, because, again, you can watch Netflix any night. Streaming's a thing. You can watch your shows at home. But when it's a long weekend like that, you want to get out of the house. You want to do something. Like you said, it's winter. You probably don't want to do something too much outside. You're going to go to the movies.
Yeah.
This is the perfect thing to release on a weekend.
And like I'm not sure if it's like a shifting movie thing or an age thing. There's very few movies now when it ends and then the lights go on, the curtains up, you feel like that. Like a day when you saw a James Bond movie, you want to like you become a spy. You saw Iron Man, you want to be super strong. I ran to my car right down the mall. Everyone was like, who's that guy? But I was like, I got to go fast.
It inspired me to run too the next day.
Exactly.
I just want to be like Sonic. Mm-hmm. Well, we're winding down here, Flobo.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on Sonic the Hedgehog? Final thoughts.
Yeah, the movie itself isn't perfect, but definitely sets the groundwork for a much larger universe, and world building is amazing. I am so glad that there's something in the modern era that older fans can bring younger fans to and share about. And so that's what culture is about. Because even though a franchise may be new, like a Harry Potter, or like a Deadpool, or like a Harley Quinn, if they have enough of a fan base supporting it, it could live forever. And this could be the start of a whole new renaissance to the Blue Bird.
Do you think it could be a whole new franchise as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Point blank, yes.
It's how I felt about Detective Pikachu. It's a fun video game film. It has a great narrative. Has a good narrative. It's far from great. It's a good narrative, and I think it just opens the door for more fun times at the movies. Like this is a fun time. If you're a fan of Sonic, you're gonna be a fan of this movie. I cannot see this disappointing any Sonic fans out there. So I think go see it if you haven't already. Go see it again. Take some friends. It's a really fun time. But we are wrapping up here, Flobo. Please comment below, subscribe, hit that like button, and give us an iTunes review on iTunes. Anatomy of a Movie. Flobito.
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at FloboBoys, on Instagram at Flobito, Flobito.com, and over at AfterBuzz TV Wrestling and Sports, the Monday Night Raw After Show and the WWE NXT After Show. I'm there. Come say hi.
You can find me at Ryan Nilsen, R-Y-N-I-L-S-E-N, on Twitter, at Ryan Nilsen on Instagram, and every Thursday, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, Star Wars News Weekly with Steph Sabra. Thank you so much for watching Anatomy of a Movie. Until next time.
And Knuckles.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.